Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Saturday Symposium.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders. Not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation. One nation. Meaning, so blessed by God. Indivisible. Incapable of being divided. With liberty, which is freedom. The right of power to live one's own life. Without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation. And justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer? And that would be eliminated from schools, too.
Well, welcome to Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson, and my co-host, Scott Osborne.
Here.
You're here?
I was going through my monologue, and I was on mute. Sorry about that, folks. Oh, Dave. Sad boy, I'm going to say, we stayed up way too late last night. We went out to Irving to have fireworks, and I'm not sure if it was 3 or 4 o'clock before I finally went to sleep. And I woke up, and I looked, and it was 11 o'clock on the dot. And I know everybody in the house must have thought I was nuts. I just got up, I ran out, grabbed the phone, and ran out to the studio. Anyway, this is Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson down in Florida and Scott Osborne here in Texas. Like Red Skelton said, from the people to the leaders, not the leaders to the people. And it has been a crazy few weeks. We've got some crazy stuff going on. We're going to have some great discussion this morning with Dan Wilson. We had a great 4th of July yesterday, a great Independence Day. Well, except it was close. It was close to perfect, Dan. I got to tell you this story, and we're going to give a little shout-out to Irving, Texas. You know, we went out there, and a great crowd, great fireworks, great fun, all kinds of fun things for the kids to do for free. Great, you know, a lot of concessions, and we had to walk a little bit. But, you know, we got going, and we got ready to do the fireworks. And the guy stood up there and said, "How many people are from Irving?" "How many people aren't?" And he said, "Well, you people who aren't, be sure to come back and do some of our stuff that's not free and not just mooch off stuff." So, you know me, Dan. I'm going to work some connections today and see if we can get through to that city council and lodge a complaint, because that was insane. All those people going out to Irving, Texas, probably buying their gas at their gas stations, going to their restaurants before, after, some. You know, some people don't care for carnival food. I'm sure there was a good group of that huge group that maybe stopped at some of their stores. Actually, we walked by quite a few little shops on the way from the parking garage down to the thing. I'm sure they got shopped in there. None of those people were mooching. But other than that, Dan, it was a great one. How was your day?
Oh, my day was pretty quiet. We've had a lot of thunderstorms, and So my 4th was spent pretty much inside watching TV, and that was about it. So it was pretty quiet. And but this, you know, the 4th reminds me, everybody thinks of our Independence Day, but something else happened on July 4th, 1826. John Adams was on his deathbed, surrounded by his family, and they knew that it was pretty close to the end. And he looks up to his family, and he says, "John, Thomas Jefferson lives." He closes his eyes for the last moment. Those were the last words he spoke. 2 hours, it just happened to be 2 hours before Thomas Jefferson died. What was ironic about it, it was the first 50th birthday of our nation. So, you know, it makes you think that if divine inspiration would not involve the two people who write the Constitution died within 2 hours of each other on the 50th birthday of this nation. You know, and I always think about that, and it's, you know, kind of interesting. Kind of ironic that both of them, you know, the two creators of our Constitution, dies on the 50th anniversary. And so I thought about that and watched replays of the Boston Pops having been grown up in that area. I've actually seen the Pops under Arthur Fiedler on the 4th of July. Found out that if you ever go to Boston for the 4th, do not too close to the howitzers. When they go off during the 1812 overture, feels like something hits you right in the chest. I mean, those things are so loud. But it was a wonderful fireworks display. They did it a day early because of the Hurricane Arthur that scooted up the coast and has been sucked up a lot of moisture from the Caribbean, which has been giving us a lot of thunderstorms. And so we've been stuck in for the last few days. And but it was an enjoyable 4th, so not quite as enjoyable as yours, but we had fun, we enjoyed it anyway. And anything new on your end?
Well, no, not anything new on my end. We're getting ready for the Red State Convention coming up here in a few weeks. Rodney Lee Conover is going to come out here, and we're going to go to Fort Worth, going to finally get to shake his hand and give him a great big bear hug, spend some time with him. That is going to be nice. I want to give a shout-out to my good friend Randy out here in this area. You can find him on my Facebook page. He posts some of the best stuff. The kid's like 23, 24 years old. He is way more mature than that, though, in his political ideology. But he passed around a very interesting tidbit yesterday that I want to share with you, because it really goes to the heart of what we do. You and I, Dan, a lot of times working on and helping a campaign. Did you know that Abraham Lincoln's friends gave him $200 to run for Congress or run for the Senate? And after he won, he gave $199.25 back. Now, I know 75 cents did not go as far in Abraham Lincoln's time, but that is absolutely incredible, folks. $200 his friends gave him. And when he won his campaign, he gave $199.25 back. Now, we Dan, you and I, help on campaigns a lot. We see a lot of money go through. We've seen a lot of campaigns waste money. And we've seen a lot of campaigns be really, really frivolous. And let me tell you, that was just an insane, insane little tidbit I thought I might throw out there. And give a good shout-out to my friend Randy Fultz here in Texas, young guy. I'm going to tell you, Dan, a lot of the pictures that I share come from Randy. In fact, I need to send you guys a friend request. I generally have a lot of mutual friends with people. I've only got one mutual friend with Randy, a friend here that is in a group for JFK conspiracy conversations. He's young. He doesn't have. He's not really connected a lot to the grassroots. But boy, the boy sure is conservative, and he sure does know his stuff. Interesting guy. Really enjoying getting to know him. But other than that, Dan, nothing new going on. We've got some crazy stuff going on in the news, though. We've got this border control problem, and Dan, I want to discuss that for a little bit, because it just absolutely infuriates me that the conservatives are the ones that really care, and the Democrats do too, but the far left really doesn't. As we watch what's going on, we're watching a man-made humanitarian crisis. The President of the United States has been behind this. And I was there as a young child when we had the Vietnam refugee program. I was there in California when the Vietnam refugees started coming back. We talked with Dr. Du, and we discussed that a little bit. And you and I are very, very compassionate. And we would absolutely love to be able to take care of every single bad situation in the world. We'd love it. We would love if we could just turn around and make every situation perfect. The problem is you can't do that. There's always going to be problems. And Dan, the illustration I keep using is Dallas has got lots of homeless people. And I've driven in certain parts of Dallas and seen kids walking down the street that looked like they were just about homeless. Oh, I'd love to take care of all that. But what would happen if I brought them all and just started bringing them in the house, one by one? Fill the house. Well, we'd run out of food real quick. They'd all be getting sick. Wouldn't be a good thing. Well, we've got Lainey Sloan. I want to give a big shout-out to her and her husband, Dr. Sloan, are out there in California with this Murrieta situation. You know they went to bust those illegals in there a couple of days ago, and they protested. Hundreds protested and stopped the bus and turned them. Well, the next night, the government got a little bit smarter, and they decided to do it in the middle of the night. And, you know, they actually threatened to arrest Lainey Sloan, sweetest lady, a Politichick contributor. They threatened to arrest her for protesting. For protesting, folks. And why are they protesting? Are they protesting because they have no compassion? No, they're not protesting because they have no compassion. They're protesting because, number one, you're transporting a lot of people from Mexico. These people are coming from South America who have had no immunizations, who have all kinds of different diseases, and some of which they're just carrying because they're used to that in where they live. You know, if you get up and you go to a foreign country and you start drinking the water, something that happens is you catch things that the people that live there that are used to them, that have got immunities built up to them, don't get. That's why when foreign travel, there's some rules and regulations behind it. Sometimes you get on the plane and they spray the plane down. Sometimes you have to be quarantined. Sometimes you have to take certain immunizations because you don't want to start traveling and spreading disease. It's a very simple thing to be done. They're not doing any of that. Starting to decide to where they're going to put all these people. But this has been a humanitarian crisis that was caused on purpose. And, you know, Dan, I'm a firm believer, and you know this because I've said this a million times, I think this is going to backfire. I really, really think this is going to backfire. I think this is what absolutely puts the nail in the coffin for the amnesty discussion. Because the Republicans that have been for some kind of amnesty are now really starting to see the true colors of what's going on the far left. And with that, I'll pass it back to you.
Well, speaking about the far left, this week I was talking to my doctor about my heart transplant. And he was telling me to contact Medicare and to get on to Medicare, and he would fill out all the paperwork. And I called him the first day, and there was a little quietness right after I called. And the lady said I had enough credits, you know, to be on Medicare, but I couldn't join until I'm 65. Well, without the heart transplant, I die within the next year or two. And I was told to get some information from my cardiologist and call back the next day. I called back the next day, and Medicare says they have no record of me. And I have to grab every W-4 since 1976 and submit it to them, or they will not allow me to get my heart transplant. And to be honest, who has a W-4s back 30-some years ago? So, and I only can attribute it to one thing, is I'm on the list that that is do not help list. because I've been fighting for this country, you know, since the days of Herman Cain, actually before. And essentially I'm being sentenced to death for standing up for my country and doing what I can to save this great nation of ours. And just like the IRS, they conveniently lose things when people need it most. So, you know, this is something that, this is how corrupt this, this administration is. That if you speak out against them, they, and you really fight for this country, they manage to find a way of making you die. Eight leaders of the of our major banks this past year has died. Tom Clancy passed away, was found with cyanide in his system. And, of course, Andrew Breitbart died a year before of a sudden heart attack. And now I'm on the list. And this just goes to show the corruption. And, you know, they said, yeah, you can have your heart transplant. You can come up with $400,000. So basically, I have about a year, maybe two at the most. And I think it's pretty crappy that a government can do that. You know, if I was from Mexico, it would have been taken care of. But they won't even take care of their own citizens. And if because of one citizen decides to stand up and do what he feels is right. And this is, you know, this is where our country has gone. This is how bad our country has become. You know, if you, you know, give yourself to your country and give everything you can to your country, what do? They kill you off. They killed 30 off on SEAL Team 6. They killed off the American Embassy, Ambassador Stevens, his aide, and two SEALs, because they were doing what was right and working, you know, doing what they could for their country. And I'm next on the list. And that's, you know, that's pretty bad when, you know, you can't even fight for your own country. I mean, it's really... This is how bad and how corrupt this nation has become. I mean, our executive branch needs to be all be brought up on treason charges, and they all need to be impeached. And I'll keep on fighting the fight until my last day. But unless the good Lord intervenes, it's about a year or two away from now. And for them to tell me within 24 hours that I have the 40 credits and then tell me I have no credits, something's wrong. You know, I caught them in their own lie. But there's a list out there of people, patriots, who they want to eliminate. And I'm on that list. And it's a shame when you have to fear your own country. You know, and that's the big news on my part this week. It wasn't a very good week, as you can tell. But I will continue fighting the fight until the good Lord takes me home. And it's a shame that, you know, I always wondered why when I had my near-death experience that they showed me the crucifixion. And I kind of got the answer. But I refuse to stop. I'll keep on going until the final day. And but this is where our government's gone. And then they allow, you know, thousands. They're coming over so fast across our borders today, you know, by the tens of thousands. And every one of them will have medical treatment, everything they need, when yet they'll turn their back on a patriot. You know, that's not a real good thing, and it's something that, well, I mean, I chose the path, and the path is I'm a patriot, and I always will be a patriot, and if it costs me my life, so be it. I mean, I'll do whatever I can for this nation, and I won't stop until the end. You know, and I was debating whether even or not to mention this, but I figured that the everybody should know, you know, why I'm not going to have the heart transplant, and why my life is going to be quite a bit shorter than I had hoped. And with that, passing it back to you. I mean,
well, and that's right, Dan. And let me tell you, I'm going to be giving you this shout-out until the last day. Not very many radio show hosts are willing to call in from the emergency room, of all places, and continue the show. It makes me crack up every time. And you're a fighter, Dan. And we're going to continue to keep fighting this. We're going to keep praying for you for this. And it's important. And you know, and we do, Dan. My sister and I are sitting here having a conversation basically about basic concepts. And you know, we've got a lot of people in this country right now who vote Democrat, who don't really realize that it's not Grandma's Democratic Party anymore. They really don't realize that the far left has hijacked the Democratic Party. And the far left has goals that the majority of the Democratic Party doesn't believe in. And I'll throw out this as an example. This came up on Facebook this last week. You saw the post I did of the Obama logo and the Redskins logo, asking which one offends you the most. And you know, I'll tell you, the Obama logo offends me not because it's Obama. The Obama logo offends me because that office is not about the man. The office has its own logo and has had its own logo for generations. It's had its own logo. The man has never needed a logo because it's not about the man. It's about the office. And it is very offensive to me that the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, would be, bring words to it, that he would be so mentally about himself that he would have his own logo. But then we're dealing with the logo of the Washington Redskins. And, you know, Dan, there is a poll out that USA Today did. 9% of the American Indians are somewhat offended of that name. 90% of the American Indians in this country could care less. They are not offended. They are like it. They are proud of it. But that is a tool that the far left uses to continue to gain control. You know, we've talked a lot in the last few weeks about silencing a speech. We've got these doctors down here at the border. They've been threatened with arrest if they talk about what they see. Common Core was built around the concept that if you talk about Common Core and you're a principal or a teacher or a superintendent, you're going to be fired. Benghazi in that YouTube video was all about suppression of free speech. They didn't use that YouTube video as a distraction from the fact that the president's war on terror was not won. They didn't do that. They used that YouTube video because they wanted to send a message with that perp walk that you better watch what you say on YouTube. Because if you don't, if you say the wrong thing, you can be arrested. And it all comes back down to our First Amendment rights, our very basic rights. And the First Amendment rights were not for things that are not offensive. I mean, who would have a problem with anybody having the freedom of speech to things that are not offensive? The First Amendment was guarantee our right to be offensive, to say something that somebody else disagreed with. And, you know, I guess it's that time, Dan, where we go back to that summer of 1787, where those men gathered together in that hot room without air conditioning. And they gathered together and they sat down and they looked at the direction this country was going to go, and they said these basic words I'm going to paraphrase. The federal government cannot micromanage. Herman Cain said it so well. And so they gave the federal government very limited powers. They knew there were certain things that it was going to take a collective government for. You know, and they do certain things. They do a great job. As bad as the post office has been financially, they really do a great job. I put my Netflix DVD in one day, and Netflix has got it the next. Mm-hmm. But there were all kinds of things that that those founding fathers knew that the federal government could not micromanage. So they said, we're going to give you these certain powers, and everything else we give to the states. And there was another special thing about that Constitution. That Constitution was not to limit powers of the individual. And there is nothing in there that limits the powers of the individual. It was designed to guarantee the freedoms of the individual. That's why we've got our Second Amendment. And it says, thou shalt not infringe. The government shall not infringe. We talked about that this last Thursday with Rodney Lee Conover. What does the word infringe mean? Well, if you look at a carpet, got a fringe on it around the edge, sometimes a skirt or a pair of pants or a vest will have a fringe. What is the fringe? The fringe is the outer edge. That Constitution says you don't even touch the outer edge of the rights of the American people to bear arms, let alone dive into the middle of the carpet. That Constitution, those men sitting there in Philadelphia during that Constitutional Convention, the summer of 1787, were so wise. They were so wise. They knew. They remembered where we started from. They were not too far removed from the days of the Mayflower. They were not too far removed from the days when those founding fathers stepped aboard this land with nothing. You know, Dan, I love to take and make the comparison between when we moved from California to Texas and the Pilgrims moved from Europe across the Atlantic to the United States, to what is now the United States. When we moved, we went down, my sister and I went down and picked out a U-Haul truck and a trailer to put to pull the pickup with. And we brought it home and we packed everything up. We probably had as much packed in that U-Haul truck as they had packed on the Mayflower. I'll believe that till the day I die. We grabbed the cat. We put him in the carrying case. We all climbed into the cars. The girls had blankets all surrounding them and all their toys in the Jeep. And we started driving. And, you know, we got down to Porterville, 20 miles away, and we stopped and we visited with my brother-in-law's family and said goodbye to them. And then we started going down the road, and I got on my cell phone with my sister, and I said, well, where are we going to stop to eat? And I don't know, we'll stop to eat somewhere. You know, we didn't have to eat like they ate on the Mayflower by a long shot. We stopped at a nice restaurant, and we sat down and had coffee and good food. And we drove and we drove and we drove. We left at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and 10 o'clock the next Sunday morning, we finally stopped. We were tired. We were very tired. Not at all. Not at all like those pilgrims were. Not at all like those strangers were coming across the Atlantic Ocean in what today we would look at as a rickety old boat. I'm sure it was at the time one of the finer sailing ships around, but from our vantage point of a giant cruise liner, that Mayflower was a rickety old boat crossing the Atlantic those few couple of months.
Oh, I wouldn't have trusted that thing in my bathtub.
I hear you. And you know, we stayed in a nice hotel. We all took baths. Although I have to say, while we were there, first thing that happened was the hot water at the hotel went wrong. But we got in the car next day, and we got in the U-Haul the next day, and we drove, and we arrived here in Mesquite, Texas. And unlike those pilgrims, when we pulled up, we had a house built. And Dan, we didn't just already have the house was already done. It had a fence around the yard. It had electricity on and water on. Pilgrims didn't have that. They arrived. They had nothing but was on the boat. In fact, the women and the children, it stayed on the Mayflower for quite a few weeks while the men went to land and started building houses and building things. And they, for a long time, all lived in one house. They had one house to start off with, a community house. And they had to go hunt their food. We got here at about midnight, and we dropped off the U-Haul. We cleaned out the Jeep, and we all got in the Jeep, and we went driving around looking for a restaurant. We ate at Applebee's or someplace. Where'd we eat? Yeah, we ate at Applebee's. Had good food. Boy, we had it good. We had a good. Those pilgrims, they didn't have an Applebee's. They didn't have a Burger King. They didn't have a Red Lobster. They had the free and open land. And they were willing to make that move to get a better life. Now, that's where the two come together. That was why we made the move, was to get a better life. But, boy, we came to luxury. And we're not rich by a long shot. We're far from rich. But next to what the pilgrims came to, boy, we came to the lap of luxury like kings in the past have lived. Those pilgrims came. Half of them died in that process over time. They started building houses. They started trading. They started putting together this small little great nation. And they did it for one reason: freedom. They were tired of a tyrant telling them where to go to church, how to think, how to reason, what they could say. They came here for freedom. And those pilgrims actually tried a socialistic form of government that first year. And boy, they found out real quick that's not going to work. So they started laying down laws. And they started growing as a nation. And a few decades later, they got to the point where we had 13 colonies. Many more had come over from many different places, England, France, Spain. We had some great founding fathers. And those founding fathers started to look at what was going on. You know, I was asked this week on Facebook, who is your favorite founding father? And you know, the answer is so hard because I'm going to tell you, Dan, there's so many of them that were so wonderful. I love John Adams' comments on New York City after he'd been there. You could actually take it and place those today. New York City hasn't changed a whole lot. But I'll tell you, I think I have to say my favorite founding father has got to be Benjamin Franklin for this reason. I love to look at the story of Benjamin Franklin and watch him go from God save the king to France, can you please come help us destroy it? Benjamin Franklin was a champion for the British at the very beginning. He believed in the mother country. He believed there could be a connection between the two. But he sat and he watched over a period of time, very, very much like what we're doing right now, watching over a period of time. Things continue to denigrate. He saw that even though he was successful over here in the United States and a respected businessman, a respected mind, when he went back over and he was over in Great Britain, even though he was in office over there, there was no respect. He was an ambassador for the United States, and there was no respect whatsoever from the British people for what he had accomplished. And he started watching the taxes and the tax stamps, the acts that they were doing, and he watched them continue to just to put their thumb down further and further until he got to the point where he was the one who went to France and said, France, you need to help us win this war. Now, you know, Dan, you and I have lived through enough times to know that there's times when we love France and their French fries, and we absolutely France. I'm at one of those loving points right now. They've just arrested Sarkozy, and he's going to go to jail. So it looks like France is going to go on. But you know, it's an important concept. It's why you and I fight for this, because we are seeing the efforts of those brave men and women in those very early days, turning around and being squashed on a daily basis. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. With that, I'll pass it back to you.
Oh, I agree. Franklin, very interesting man. As you said, he was a devout Englishman in his early life. And he set that tone to his sons. But Franklin, over time, came to realize that the monarchy was not the way to go, where a single individual had that right to tell others how to live. And when he did separation, when he finally separated from the British and joined the Patriot movement, his son was a mayor assigned by the throne, and the two of them went head to head. And they argued about the points Franklin was trying to give his reasoning for separating from Britain, and his son wouldn't have anything to do with it. And it came to terms that eventually that the two never spoke to each other again. They went their separate ways. So it was really difficult on Franklin. Franklin wasn't the greatest father in the world, but he was a great statesman. Everybody loved him. He was extremely intelligent. You know, the Franklin stove, he was the one of the pioneers with electricity. There's so many things that he did. But when he saw the war going, you know, that we were going to be in a revolutionary war, he knew the French couldn't stand the British. So he went to France, and he uses his charismatic personality. And it was him who won over France figured that engaging and forcing the British to send more resources to the United States would also enable the French to have a better chance of attacking Great Britain. You know, it's kind of a mutual thing back and forth. But when our nation would be informed, when you're talking about great leaders, and God bless us with a bunch of them, Adams, Jefferson, Madison. But the one person really I have to stand up to and really admire was George Washington. When it came down to the very beginning of forming our government, they wanted to, first of all, they wanted to call George Washington King. And he said no. And they said, His Majesty. And he said no. And they also wanted to give him a lifetime appointment. And again, he said no. He said, I want to, he said, the office of which I hold, we will call it the presidency. And he goes, and his people asked, well, what should we call you? He said, Mr. President. And we shall have it on 4-year terms. And at the end of the second term, he said, it's time for me to go back home where I'll live out my days. And people were like, please come back and lead us. And he goes, this is not the way our country is going to be. Our country is going to be one where our president is elected by the people. And he stood up for that when he had every opportunity to take over as a king. But he didn't. And for that, I admire him greatly. And during the formation of the Constitution, he added his 2 cents in, you know, about certain things, about, you know, state sovereignty and things like that. He understood that the distribution of power was our salvation. And that's why the power was vested in the states and not the federal government. And when we look at our Second Amendment, the thing it says is a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. And then they were talking about the 13 colonies here. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And it was written up specifically that way, saying that the free state has the rights under the Constitution to protect itself from a tyrannical government that has gone out of control, of which we have right now. Our government no longer acknowledges the sovereignty of each and every state. And instead, they go out and they go into Texas, trying to take the water rights. They go into Nevada, try to kick a man off land that his family's farmed for over 100 years. They're going into various states trying to push their power on it, you know, with the Common Core. You know, they're influencing states to put gun laws that are so restrictive that pretty soon, if we don't do something about it, we aren't going to have gun laws. They're going to be taken away from us. It's already happened in a couple of states. And unless we put a stop to that, it'll continue. And what we need to do is bring the power back to the states and remove it from the federal government. And we need a person, a leader, who is willing to stand up and start cutting down the size of the federal government to the point where it should be down to the point where it's where it was designed to be. You know, doing the roads, doing our currency, using our military, and setting the laws of the, you know, supporting the laws of the land, which is our Constitution, and making decisions. The Supreme Court should make decisions solely on if a state cannot come to an answer, they are to refer to the Supreme Court. Instead, the Supreme Court right now is making up its own laws. And these are things that need to be changed. Congress, every member of Congress has to remember that they are the voice of their constituents. They are not the voice of their pockets. They need to stand, you know, we need to get rid of these rhinos and the far left and bring back true patriots on both sides. I mean, I wish I could blame the Democratic Party for all the problems, but that's not the truth.
Isn't that the truth?
I mean, it is. I mean, the Republicans are just as bad. And now is the time where both sides, if we want to meet in the middle, the Democrats should start listening to what we're doing. And they should start, you know, forming a Democratic Party based on that, the beliefs of John F. Kennedy, you know, or Thomas Jefferson. And, you know, break off from these socialist mongers that are trying to turn us into a communist state. Because I know the Democrats don't want anything near of what's going on. But their side got taken over by the socialist movement, by the progressives, the far left, whatever you want to call them, while the Republican Party's gotten taken over by the elitist or rhinos or whatever you want to call it. And between the two, they're the ones running our country into the ground. And the thing is they consist of a relatively small percentage. I mean, as you said, Dianne Feinstein, I had to put up with her for 11 years. And I would say about 95% of what she said, I disagreed with. But I have to admire her because she is a woman of integrity. And she stood up against this presidency. But we need enough people to, we need more people to do this. And that's why it's so important that we bring the pendulum back to the middle where both sides can work together for a better nation. And this is the key to success for this country. Because the truth doesn't lie on the far right or the far left. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. You know, and it can oscillate a little bit back and forth. But for it to swing as far as it has been is a formula for the destruction of our nation. And this is what we need to fight for. We need to fight and get both sides together. And the thing is, we need to try to find a way to talk to the left and get them to see that we are not the enemy. We're just as upset as they are about our government. And it's time for the people, not we the Republicans, not we the Democrats, we the people need to get together and say enough is enough. This is baloney, and we're going to stop you one way or the other. If it's in the, you know, we prefer to do it in the ballot box, but if that doesn't work, we'll do whatever was necessary. And that's, you know, that's the key. This country was designed and created so that all men are created equal, that we are all equal. And I think we've come far enough after the Equal Rights Amendments and the transition we went through in the early 60s, that we are a nation who views itself as one nation. And the racism crap that our executive branch is trying to push, it's just that. It's crap. Because I don't know. I mean, you're always going to have like 1% who are racist. That's just a given. You can't have perfection. But you know something? 99% of the people judge each other on who they are. They judge not a person by their color. They judge them by what's inside. And that's what counts. You know, and we need to unite as a people. And I will stand next to a person of darker skin, either one of us holding a flag, and we'll march forward together. And I will march forward with a Jewish man on, or a woman on the other side, and an Indian person. It doesn't matter to me. They're all citizens of this great nation. And it's time that stood up and said, this is a great nation. this isn't the nation that Obama is portraying us to be. This isn't the nation that he is trying to destroy. We are the greatest nation in the world because, you know something, we represent everybody. And we represent the very gifts that God gave us. The gift of freedom. The gift of choice. I mean, these were given to us by God from day one. And this government is trying to take that away, as have many other governments in this world. There's very few governments in this world where people have the freedom of choice, who have the freedom to do what they want, to achieve what they want, to have the freedom to be able to move about, to say, I want to go from X, you know, from California to Texas, or California to Florida, or Florida to Maine, you know, wherever. To have that freedom. And that freedom is so precious. And it is more precious. I mean, this is why our forefathers wrote up the Constitution the way they did. It's to protect that. The Second Amendment is less about actual guns than the protection of our own freedom and our own sovereignty. You know, and right in the middle of it, it says a free state. And the gun, the arms, are only a method of protecting that. It's not a thing that, you know, we're out there because we're warmongers or anything like that. This is to say, you know, if you attack us, we're going to protect ourselves. And that's the whole gist behind the Second Amendment. And that's why I wrote and I've talked about, you know, automatic weapons and things like that. It's not because I'm a warmonger. It's because I understand that if somebody's coming at me with an automatic weapon, it would be a lot better if I had one too. I mean, that's it. And see, our government is trying to take all these things away from us. You know, if they come at us with fighter jets, yeah, we should have handheld surface-to-air missiles so we can protect ourselves. Not as an offensive weapon, but as a defensive weapon. And we should have howitzer cannons and all the things that we used to have in the armories. You know, that the regular person could not afford. And I'm saying that, you know something, each one of our states needs to have a militia. Here in Florida, we have four of them right now. Four major ones. And Scott, I bet you if you asked around, you guys at least have four of them.
Oh, yeah, more.
I mean, you got bunches. And
Texas is...
Yes, Texas is all ready to go. And I bet you Alabama does, Mississippi does, everybody. Because we're protecting, getting ready to protect our states from a tyrannical government. It's a shame we have to even think that way. Because when I was a kid, that thought never even crossed my mind. But this is the way the times are today. And I'm going to recommend from this day forth that a militia in every state be maintained forever. So, heaven forbid, if this ever happens again, they're going to know, they're going to have a fight on their hands. And with that, I'll pass it back to you.
Well, and exactly, Dan, and I'm glad you brought up the racism thing. Because it always amazes me that I'm racist because I don't agree with the president of the United States today. But for the exact same reasons, I didn't agree with Bill Clinton, but I wasn't a racist then. And anybody that knows, you or I, knows that there's not racist bone in a body. I don't care what color you are. I was proud. I was proud, folks, when we elected a man that was not white to the presidency of the United States. Now, I was not proud of the man that we picked, but I was proud as a nation that we had gotten to that, because we have had times in the past when racism was a real problem. I do need to point out that it wasn't on the Republican side. It was on the Southern Democrat side. But you and I are Frederick Douglass Republicans. And we're Frederick Douglass Republicans because we believe in some basic principles. We believe we've got a high respect, and we believe in what the Founding Fathers did. We've got to respect the Constitution. We believe that if you have an overbearing, large government that is unfettered, it will always, always, folks, no matter where you're at, lead to tyranny and bondage. And when you have a broken up, more locally controlled government, it protects you from that. We believe in these basic principles. We just happen to have a man in the White House who is black that doesn't agree with those principles. He doesn't respect those principles. He sees the Constitution as a hindrance to what he wants to accomplish, instead of the great founding document that it was that protects our freedoms. He believes that in order to make a perfect world, you have to be able to control people and make them do what you want. He believes that, folks. You and I don't believe that. You and I have got full confidence in the American people, although the American people right now have been hoodwinked in a lot of ways. They have not educated themselves on current events. They have not educated themselves on what's going on politically in this country and economically in this country. They've been told a lot of lies. They've been lied to by the mainstream media. They've been lied to by our own government in many ways. We could look at all kinds of different examples of that. They just put a report out very quietly here this last week. Your father probably is on this, that 1936 was the hottest year on record.
Right.
Not the 80s, not the 90s, not the last decade and a half, but 1936 was the hottest record on decade. You know, Dan, I had a great example of able to, not to shoot off on global warming, but I had the great example of being able to show my nieces exactly how the other side lies. My niece came home with a scholastic worksheet that showed the shrinkage of the Arctic Pole, the ice, and showed a picture 15 years ago and showed a picture today and how that had shrunk. So I went to the internet with them, and I showed them the picture of how, during the same amount of time, the Antarctic was growing. Well, and they were mad, man. They were mad. Why didn't they show us that? Well, because they're trying to get you to believe that the world is coming to a Chicken Little scenario where the sky is falling, and it's not. It's very, very simple. The Earth is a living organism, and it breathes over time. Times get hot, times get cold. We do that every year through spring, summer, winter, and fall. And we do that over every 7 to 8 years, the El Nino and the El Niña kind of change direction, and that affects things. The sun goes in cycles, and it makes us a little bit hotter sometimes than it is, and colder. But it gets a little hotter for a while, then it gets a little colder. And excuse me, it's breathing. It's like breathing, folks. And see, so to go back to this concept of the lying, they lie. And they have absolutely, on almost every issue, given a set of rules around what they have to lay out in order for to accomplish their task. Another one would be gun control. They will tell you that to solve the problems, we've got to register everybody, we got to limit this, limit that, and in doing so, we will lower the problems, the incidents of murder with a gun. But that's pretty simply explained away when you talk about, what's that state, Dan, over there on the Pacific coast? I forget.
The one from Mexico. I wonder if they want it back.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to Mexico. California has the most stringent Brady laws in the nation, and the worst gun statistic problems in the nation. So Brady laws don't work, folks. Brady laws don't work. Now, are there places that have very, very little gun control that have some problems? Well, yes. And not because of gun laws, not because of lack of gun laws. A lot of times, you know, it's a matter of society is degraded to the point where children are not properly taught.
Uh-oh.
But taking everybody's guns away is not going to get rid of murder. We remember, all we got to do is go back to the first few chapters of Genesis. Cain didn't have a gun, folks. That was the first murder. And we could look at all kinds of other issues. Common Core, oh my goodness, the lies that they've spouted about Common Core. Let me tell you, folks, Common Core was created as a system, as a scheme. And it was not created by the states. It was created by a small handful of individuals who, by the way, have never been involved in education. And then it was taken to the states. A couple of representatives from each state sat down for a few weeks, and they went over it, and they gave their suggestions, and they left. And then they turn around and pass it as the governors put this all together. They don't talk about the lies. They don't talk about the bribery, the deceit. And that's what the far left is all about. And again, I'm going to say that's not the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has been hijacked. The Democratic Party, just like the Republican Party, is the people. It's not the leaders. It's the people. The Republican Party, in many ways, has been hijacked. Although I'll tell you, Dan, this situation with McDaniel is looking pretty interesting. I've got word from very good, very close sources that Thad Cochran is contemplating a resignation.
Well, if I were him,
Getting embroiled in some illegalities where he could actually, if tied to all this, go to jail. They have found, I got word from the campaign manager last night, that they are up to 4,900 ballots in that election. Now, remember, he won by 6,000. 4,900 ballots where an individual voted in the Democratic primary, during the primary, and then in the runoff voted as a Republican. Now, you just can't do that. That's just a basic, you just cannot do that. You know, Dan, there's times when I get really frustrated. I open Drudge Report or open The Blaze or open any other number of news sources, and I get kind of discouraged. But I see what's going on in the grassroots, and I see some of the fights that are going on, and we're winning. I think we're finally turning the ship around. We're winning. They're having a rally today for McDaniel. Chris McDaniel today. I wish I could have been down there in Mississippi. But I'll tell you, the poll numbers are really, really turning against Cochran in Mississippi. The people are upset because they acted like the mafia in this election. They didn't do their best and just try and win. They cheated. Thad Cochran's team went around talking about how the McDaniel, if he won, he was going to take away all the money from the black people. How obnoxious. Senator Thad Cochran, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need. You need to be bent over somebody's knee, pull your pants down, literally, bare your old man butt, and have somebody spank you with a belt. That is exactly what really needs to happen. Because obviously you didn't get enough of those as a child to teach you good character. Because I'm going to tell you, Thad McDaniel, what you've been doing is not the character of a Republican. What you did was the character of the far left. And John McCain, I've always said I gave you some great kudos for what you went through Vietnam. I'm ready for them to take you back. Because you're making excuses for this obnoxious behavior on the part of the Republican establishment. This isn't good character. This isn't Christian behavior. Boy, I'm going to tell you, Dan, I'll tell you, if I could shake Thad Cochran's hand, I could be that close to him. I would tell him, you need to go forward and make this right with God first, because you have greatly, greatly sinned in his eyes. Because this is not the character of a Christian to run a campaign that way. And, you know, sometimes we that have Christian beliefs, you know, we all make mistakes, of course. But when we run a campaign, it should be different. Christ said we're supposed to be a peculiar people. We're supposed to be different. We're supposed to have a different standard. We're supposed to stand at a different level. Thad Cochran is not standing at that level. Shame on you, Thad Cochran. Shame, shame, shame on you. And Dan, we start to watch, and you mentioned this earlier, we start to watch the establishment on both sides. They're not serving the people anymore. The Democratic establishment has totally walked away, basically, from what the Democratic platform used to be, or one that I didn't always agree with anyways, but at least it was a patriotic American platform. No longer the party of JFK, and the Republican establishment is no longer the party of Lincoln. It is no longer the party of Lincoln. It is no longer the party of Reagan in the establishment. But the people are. The people still are. And the people in the Republican establishment are waking up, not just the Tea Party people, but the regular people are starting to wake up and to see exactly what's going on. And I believe over this next few months, you're going to sit and you're going to watch as the Republican establishment is dismantled. We watched Eric Cantor a couple of weeks be tossed out on his nose. And not just tossed out by a huge margin. I mean, that was a slaughter. And Dan, you and I have worked on enough campaigns to know that that is almost unfathomable to have an incumbent to be ousted that way in a primary. It's almost unheard of. So that tells me the American people are waking up and they're tired. Very, 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 very tired. You know, Dan, there was something that happened last night I gotta bring into this because I think it applies. I was out passing me out some Sid Miller seeds. Now, Sid Miller, we all know, our listeners know, running for agricultural commissioner here in Texas, a great man, a patriot, a statesman. He has quickly moved to the top of the list of anybody I have ever supported. Great man. And Dan, remember when we were working for Herman Cain, I had the Cain business cards group in Team Cain. And it, along with the social media team, were the two largest groups in Team Cain. And I was I was making business cards that you could print out at home and leave everywhere. And we left them all. There were thousands of people all over the country leaving Kane business cards everywhere. My favorite place, Dan, was in the toilet paper roll in the public restroom. You know, you go in there, you do your thing, you tuck a business card up in there. Then when the next person comes in and pulls, out drops the Herman Cain business card. But I left them in doctor's offices and magazines. I left them at gas stations, pumps. I left them just laying in particular places around grocery stores. I left a trail of Herman Cain business cards everywhere I went, along with thousands of other people all across the United States. And I became known for that, and I loved that. But I'm going to tell you, these packets of bluebonnet seeds that Sid Miller's got, Sid Miller, Republican for Republican Ag Commissioner, the official state flower of Texas, plant in September, vote in November. And, you know, it's really simple. And I brought a bunch of these back home, and I've been passing them out. I passed them out at church. That has been my little way of politicking some Sid Miller at church. I gave all the little ladies some bluebonnet seeds. And they've all got Sid Miller's name on them. Well, last night when we went out to Irving to go to this fireworks display, I took me some Sid Miller bluebonnet seeds, and I stuck my Sid Miller stickers in the brim of my hat. And so I had quite a few people, of course, looking at the hat, and I got that name out, just a little bit of name recognition. And then as I was walking through, I noticed these people with Wendy Davis stickers who were signing up people to vote. Battleground Texas was out there, and boy, did I give myself a big grin. And I already handed out a couple of sunflower seeds. I keep calling them sunflower seeds. My niece last night kept calling them sunflower seeds, and now she's got me stuck on sunflower seeds. They are bluebonnet seeds, Texas bluebonnet seeds. So I'd already passed out a couple of packages of bluebonnet seeds and had two really good discussions about Sid Miller. A couple of votes. I think I got a couple of people. Definitely when they go to vote, they're going to know who that name is. That is for sure. And then I got to thinking, you know, I think I'd like to take these young kids and throw them a little bone. So you know me, Dan. I went marching up to these two guys that were standing up there, signing up voters with their Wendy Davis stickers on their back of their envelope, holding the voter registration pamphlets. Well, I gave them each a package of Sid Miller bluebonnet seeds. And the one guy looked kind of squirrely. He really looked kind of far left. The other kid looked kind of normal, everyday Texan. The one kid looked like he was straight out of California, actually, kind of. And he didn't see what was on the bluebonnet seeds, but he saw what was on my hat. And if looks could kill, when he all of a sudden realized he was talking to one of those Republicans, and there was a Republican out there in their space handing out these bluebonnet seeds with Sid Miller's name on them. And boy, it was rather fun, and they were very nice, and they were both very cordial. The other guy was a lot more cordial than the one was, but they definitely did not exactly know what to do with this guy in a cowboy hat running around out there passing out Sid Miller bluebonnet seeds. So it was fun. But let me tell you, folks, because that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. When you're out having a discussion with somebody about politics, you're changing minds and hearts. And I handed out, I handed out about 10 packages of bluebonnet seeds before the night was over and had about three conversations total when it was all done. But let me tell you, that was what it's all about. Daily getting out and helping change minds and hearts. Daily getting out and trying to help good men that we know are going to do what they say when they get into office.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue this fight, Dan. We're going to continue it because it's important. We're going to continue to blog talk radio. We're going to continue to do all kinds of things. Anyways, with that, Dan, I'll pass it back to you.
Well, I agree with you 300%. As I said, even with the setback thrown at me, Do they think it's going to shut me up? No. I'm going to scream louder than ever. Because if that's my destiny, that's my destiny. But my country means far more to me than my own personal life. And, see, that's what our forefathers understood. That, what we're doing is far bigger than the individual. It's the people, every one of us, from coast to coast. It's we the people. We're the ones in charge. And the ones on the far left of this country just happen to be. Talk about far left. They're far left on everything. Anyway, but each and every one of them is a piece of the government. You see, we are not, our government is not an establishment above us. It's people like you and I who were elected by our neighbors to represent them. And see, this is what people don't understand. When we say we're a government of the people, by the people, for the people, that means it's you and I. Every single one. Red Skelton said it perfectly. It's just as much my country as it is yours. And that, we have to turn around is that each and every single one of us has a vested interest in this country. And if we are to have the freedom and we are to have the ability to achieve what we want, our children, we should be teaching them that if they want to be a rocket scientist, if they want to be an astronaut or a doctor or a plumber or a carpenter, whatever they want to be, they should have that right to choose what they want to be. And it's up to each and every individual to decide what they want and to put the efforts in themselves to achieve those goals. We talk about Frederick Douglass a lot, and, we are talking about racism. Well, the Democratic Party doesn't even know who Frederick Douglass is. But I hate to burst their bubble, but Frederick Douglass' favorite comment was, "I'm a black, dyed-in-the-wool Republican." And the reason he said that is because he's black. He was a slave who didn't even own his own body for the first 20 years of his life. And he died top 1% of this country in a time when it was virtually impossible for that to happen. But he alone showed what is possible in this nation. That if you have the drive, you have the personality, and you have that goal set, and you let nothing get in your way, then you can achieve it. And that's the beautiful thing about this nation. You know, it's Frederick Douglass looked at every obstacle and saw it as a stepping stone to get to where he wanted to go. He didn't see these obstacles, the things that were preventing him. He saw the obstacles as something that was getting him one step closer. You know, we'll go to present-day times. My father grew up during the Great Depression. They were so poor that they would have potato sandwiches for dinner. He was so sick of having one slice of meat between two pieces of bread. They had nothing. He worked in a chicken coop when he was a little child. But he had a goal. He had a goal. He wanted to get his college degree. And everybody said he was a nut. But he took every obstacle and saw it as a stepping stone. He didn't have the money. My grandparents didn't have the money to send him to college. So he took something that he was good at. He was good at football. And that's he got a football scholarship. And got his undergraduate degree. And then he went to work. He got married and had children, and he worked full-time as a rocket scientist and put himself through his master's degree and his PhD to achieve the goals he wanted to achieve. And he's one person out of millions in this country who have done that. You know, Rockefellers, they weren't all born with money, nor were the Vanderbilts or any of the rich families that we know today. They all started out, if you go down to the lineage, they all started out as a bunch of farmers stuck on the side of the ocean, freezing their butts off. Half of the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock died after the first year. But they had a goal. They had a drive. They knew that the only way they could achieve it is by praying to God and looking at every obstacle as a stepping stone towards what they wanted. And they made their mistakes. They later migrated a little further up the coast to Boston, because they had a nice harbor. And they created a community that was based basically on the same ideals as what was in Britain. But instead of having the Church of England, they had the Church of the Puritans. And there was a group of people who said, no, this isn't right. We're supposed to be a nation where we have freedom of religion. So they moved south about 80 miles, and a guy came up with separation of church and state. No, it's not mentioned in the Constitution. And the reason why it's not mentioned in the Constitution was 180 years later, by the time the Constitution was written, it was understood. It was understood that was just another one of our freedoms. And every person in the colonies had the freedom to achieve what they wanted. Some created great, huge plantations, and then they went on to business, you know, with the Slater Mill, where we finally really entered into the industrial age in the early 1700s. And we had short growing seasons. So down south, they created these massive plantations because they had the longer growing seasons. And they sold their cotton to the people in New England so they could create the fabrics and that were used for trade and were used within our nation. And things started just dividing up to where everything worked together. And if somebody came up with a good idea, no matter what color you were, you made it big. And this is what our nation was. This is the birth of our nation. This is why when the British came over and said, no, we're going to have class segregation, we're going to tax you, you are not going to have representation. And we said, yeah, right. And you can stick it where the sun don't shine. And that is what caused the revolution, is that the British tried to instill their ideals on a nation they had left alone for over 200 years by that time, because they were so involved in their conquest of establishing British colonies all over the world, they didn't give the American colonies enough time. So we were left to our own devices, and we created our own nation. And then by the time they did have time, and they came over here and tried to instill their beliefs on us, and it was too late. We had already established our country. And although that, you know, people think on July 4th, it was real, real simple, that we, you know, all just said, yep, we're a country, and off we went. And there's nothing further from the truth, because there were a lot of people that we called loyalists that were still loyal to the crown. And the patriots, you know, we were fighting one against the other. And you couldn't tell who was on your side or not. And this is how it went, you know, for quite a few years. Until the British finally gave up. The loyalists went home, back to England, and we became a nation. And then the British came back some years later, in 1812 to be exact, because we were never really considered a nation until 1812, where we had an organized militia, and we had an actual military. And we once again beat the British, the strongest military in the world. We beat them because we had an organized military. But more than that, we had that burning, what I call the burning flame of freedom within our hearts. And we had our belief in God. You know, we had the Jewish, we had the Christians. And we didn't see each other as adversaries. We saw each other as fellow Americans. And every person in our nation at that time, a known nation, considered themselves Americans. And some years later, you know, when I moved to California, I met an 84-year-old Indian. He was a Serrano Indian, and the last of his tribe. The few remaining members of his tribe were taken into the mission band of Morongo Indians on the edge of the Coachella Valley. And World War II broke out. He was 17 years old. And he lied about his age like many, many young men did. And he joined the 82nd Airborne. And on D-Day, he jumped into Normandy. And he fought behind the lines. As many of you know, during the Normandy invasion, nobody ended up in the right place. But he just joined a squadron that was close by of fellow Americans. And he fought from 42 to the end of the war. And you're not going to meet a prouder American than this man right there. His name was Bob Salgado, and we used to call him Indian Bob, just as, because there were a lot of Bobs in the area. And, you know, I asked him about the, when that first thing came up about the Indians, the Washington Redskins. And I asked him about it, and he goes, good team, you know, and that was that's as far as he went. You know, the things the left are making up is a bunch of crock of baloney. But see, our nation was formed and created by people of all races and all colors. And it's what makes our nation so great, because we take the attributes of everybody to form a greater, freer, stronger nation. And with that, I'll pass it back to you.
Well, exactly, Dan, and we're heading towards the top of the hour already. I don't know how we get here every week. It seems like the time goes by so fast. We're having fun. So good conversation today, and important concepts. I do want to talk a little bit about what's coming up on Contending for Truth Radio, because we have some great things coming up. Next Tuesday, we have two guests that I have been looking forward to having on a show for quite some time now. Dan, I was getting my news from Breitbart before I knew who Andrew Breitbart was. I've been getting, of course, I get a lot of my news from Drudge, and Drudge uses a lot of Breitbart stuff, but there was a time when that website was kind of a mustard yellow, very serious-looking website. Had great news on it always, and some good discussion in the chat rooms, and before I even knew who Andrew Breitbart was, for years before that, I got a lot of my news from Breitbart.com. And we learned who Andrew Breitbart was, and he was quite a colorful character. Bless his heart, miss him. He died way too young. But they've continued with Breitbart, and it's gotten to be a bigger piece of my news. And then they opened up something very special. They gave a great present, Dan, to the number one state in the nation when it comes to business climate. Texas.
Florida.
They gave us Breitbart, Texas. And now we've got Breitbart, Texas down here, located, I believe the head office is in Lubbock, actually. But Breitbart, Texas has been working hard. Lana and Brandon Darby and all of these great journalists that are here in Texas, helping push Texas news. And we've got two that we're going to have on Tuesday night show. Merrill Hope, who covers a lot about education. She covers a lot about Common Core and C-Scope, not only what's going on here in Texas, and has really helped been a purveyor of information here in Texas on C-Scope and what's going on in our schools, but Common Core as a whole around the nation is some of the problems. Merrill Hope, fine lady, great writer, and looking forward to having her on. And Bob Price, who covers a lot of political issues. He covers legislative stuff, and he also covers border and sovereignty of the Texas border. Bob Price is the one who helped put Sid Miller at the top of Drudge. He had two articles that went up to the top of Drudge about this BLM land grab up here on the Red River. Bob Price was all over it. In fact, during those few weeks, I don't know how many articles. We'd have to ask him how many articles he put out about that and the fight that we put up here. So Bob Price and Merrill Hope from Breitbart, Texas, are going to be our guests. We're going to talk a little bit about Breitbart, Texas and its work. Of course, well, I'm sure we will talk a little bit about Andrew Breitbart. And then, of course, they're going to be two excellent guests to talk about two of our subjects that we cover a lot on American sovereignty on Tuesday, which is parental sovereignty and educational sovereignty, as well as our border sovereignty. Not only our national border at the bottom of Texas, Texas shares a border with the federal government. That bottom border against Mexico is a national border, as well as it's the border of Mexico into our state. And then, you know, we don't just have to worry about that, but the northern border along the Red River, where the BLM is trying to take 90,000 acres away from a farmer that's had it in his family for decades, in fact, over a century. So we're going to be able to talk about those issues that we talk about a lot, as well as what's going on with Breitbart, Texas, and where they're going. And it's just going to be a great show. They are two very fine individuals. I've had a lot of conversations with Merrill Hope on Facebook and in the background. But I've met Bob Price and got to chat with him in person. We're looking forward to having those two as guests. And then on Thursday, a dream that I've had for a long time is finally coming true. We are going to have the Politichicks. We're going to have Anne Marie Morrell, Dr. Gina Loudon, and we are going to have Morgan Brittany on Thursday night's show with Rodney Lee Conover U. We're going to have a great discussion. You know, Anne Marie Morrell put together, she had a dream of bypassing the mainstream media and doing a Politichicks TV, and together with the Liberty Alliance put that together in 2011. Shortly thereafter, she added Dr. Gina and Morgan. And those ladies are working harder than any other three ladies I know in the conservative movement to help share the truth, what's going on around the country. And, of course, we've got good friends who write and contribute for them, Macy France and Lainey Sloan. In fact, we had Lainey on Thursday night show talking about what's going on down there in California in Murrieta. Lainey is a contributor and an excellent writer and a good friend, somebody that I chat with on almost a weekly basis. And Lainey's been putting this together for me, so we're looking forward to that. So it's going to be a full week this next week. Dan? Between Tuesday and Thursday's show, two exciting shows. We are finally, Dan, I can announce this, we are finally working on, though, my dream show. Rodney Lee Conover is working his connections, and we are going to eventually have the great Phyllis Schlafly on a Thursday night show here soon. Dan, you might have to call in for me and be there because I think I will probably faint as the show starts. I'm going to tell you, she was doing what you and I were doing, Dan. The Roosevelt years, without Facebook, without Twitter, without Blog Talk Radio, without YouTube, without all the tools, she single-handedly pushed over the Equal Rights Amendment, and she has been very, very instrumental in help pushing over Common Core. And we're looking forward to that one coming up here soon. And we've got some other guests we've got lined up. We're working on putting them on the calendar. We're going to have some more good guests on this show as well as our others. We will rejoin ladies' Bible classes next week. All the ladies will be back in California, and we will be doing that, of course, on Fridays. Friday at 12:30 Texas time, we will be doing that. And then, of course, next Saturday, Saturday Symposium. I mean, I got a couple of people I'm working on, hopefully, to get us a guest this next week as well. Dan, we also want to give a great big shout-out to Dan Butcher of Pundit Press, syndicating each one of our shows on Pundit Press, as well as a writer to the Pundit Press, and you've been getting our articles on there. We've been sharing them. They've got a great audience, and you've been doing some great articles, and they've got a lot of other great information in there. So go to punditpress.com, and you can find the radio shows. You can find some great shows, the Evans Miller Show and Kenneth McClinton and his exceptional conservative show, as well as ours and many others. I do have to say our Conover U show on Thursdays has made it to the number 8 show of the top 10 shows on Pundit Press, and we're excited about that. And then next Tuesday as well, I can very, very excitedly, another show that's on Pundit Press is the Josh Berenstein Show. Josh broadcasts actually out of Arizona, and he broadcasts over the radio waves as well as on a number of different medias on the internet. And Josh Berenstein has asked me to come on and be a guest. It was kind of odd, Dan. I wasn't quite sure exactly what to do with that. I'm used to being the host, not the guest. But he says he wants to have me on as a guest. So I will be next Tuesday, in the hour before we start American Sovereignty, I will be a guest on Josh Berenstein's show and be able to promote our Tuesday night show as well as talk about some Texas politics and things that are going on. I'm sure we will talk about a little bit about Herman Cain and the grassroots and all kinds of things. I want to encourage everybody, listen to Josh Berenstein's show. Josh is a young father, a young single father, raising his child. He's a great patriot. He's conservative. And let me tell you, outspoken as they come, he's never afraid to tell us the way it is. And I've been a big fan of his for a long time, so it is very exciting to go on to the Josh Berenstein show. And then, of course, as we go on each week, we are going to continue to have some other great guests as we go on. So with that, I will pass it back to you for your closing remarks, Dan. We got about 5 minutes, and then we will sign it out.
Yeah, I'm also working on getting a few of our candidates down in the southern part of the state because it's very, very important for us here in Florida to start really turning the southern part of the state red instead of blue. And I am also talking to Enrico and to try to get him back on and get the Latin voice out. We got our elections coming up in three weeks now, so I'm going to be pushing a lot to get our candidates on, and so we have a little bit of, you know, we can get their information out, spread out throughout the country. And we have so much, you know, I know that Saturday Symposium, probably one of the smaller shows, but people, you know, spread the word. We have a lot of good things to say, and I think that I encourage all of you to read my posts. They're, as I said, it's I'm one of seven writers for the Pundit Press, and I'm really proud about that. And I discuss different topics. Everything from history to current events to the legal aspects of what is going on in this country, and it's a little menagerie of different things. But please read them, and if you cannot find the Pundit Press or they are also on my homepage, and feel free to browse through my posts and go back as far as you want. We might have some my personal things in between, but most of them are my just my writings. So feel free to, you know, jump in and look at them, and hope you enjoy them, and looking forward to this summer and seeing some major shakeups. I agree with Scott. I think all of our work is finally paying off, and we're starting to see the grassroots movement really starting to take off, and we're waking people up, and we couldn't do it just alone. We needed your help, and a lot of you have been doing that, and encourage your friends to spread the word, and let's go out and win this country back. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Scott.
Exactly, Scott. Dan, and I want to thank you. Another great show. We're having a great time. I had an audience today. I've got my sister sitting out here and her mother. So I had a studio audience. It's always kind of fun, Dan. And of course, you know, Dan, we love doing this, and we continue keeping you in our prayers, you and your health. You just keep healthy. We're going to get you there, I promise. It's important because we got to continue to fight this fight. We had some great discussion today. I want to give one more shout-out to the great Sid Miller. Go to sidmiller.com. It's millerfortexas.com. And check out his social media. Check out his positions. Check out his videos. Great, great guy. I'm hoping to see here in another couple of weeks and spend some more time with him. He's been up fishing in Colorado for a couple of weeks, so the campaign kind of slowed down a little bit after the convention. I think we, of course, needed that. But with that, Dan, this is Contending for Truth Radio. This is Saturday Symposium, and we are going to put us out. I just can't help myself, Dan. I just can't help myself because, you know, you're in the number two state, and I'm in the deep heart of Texas.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky is wide and high, deep in the heart of Texas. Sage in bloom is like perfume. deep in the heart of Texas reminds me of the one I love. Deep in the heart of Texas. Along the trails, deep in the heart of Texas, the rabbits rush around the brush, deep in the heart of Texas, the cowboys cry, ki-yippee-yi, deep in the heart of Texas, the doggies bawl. Texas.